Hello again, witches, seekers, and friends, and welcome to the Fat Feminist Witch podcast, the show where we do a little ranting, raving, and wand waving. I'm your host, Paige Vanderbeck, and together we're going to explore magic and spirituality, social justice, the psychic realm, and truly modern witchcraft. Hello again, witches, and thank you for tuning in to the Fat Feminist Witch podcast. I'm so happy to be back here with you in a brand new year and with a brand new episode. Today I'm talking about darkness, both in magic and just in life. Darkness is something that scares people. It's something we desperately try to avoid, and this is true in a literal sense, you know, by turning on the lights. And metaphorically, by pushing anything we perceive as dark out of our minds, out of our hearts, and out of our day-to-day life. The word has transcended its literal meaning, which is just a time when there is little or no light. And it's become a repository for everything that frightens us or that makes us uncomfortable. Honestly, I think it would be just as accurate to say that today's episode is about magic and about emotions that make people uncomfortable. It's natural to avoid discomfort. You know, if you're sitting in a way that's not comfortable, you shift around and you find a more comfortable position. If a person is making you feel uncomfortable emotionally, you get away, or maybe you assert your boundaries. And if magic makes us uncomfortable, we'll avoid it. You know, we just don't work with it. And for some people, they'll declare that there's something inherently wrong with it, and that it should be avoided by everyone. I remember working at a witch store and having my boss get in my face one day and say, "Just so you know, if I find out that anyone here is involved in anything dark, they will be fired immediately." And when I asked her to clarify, you know, she got angry and she couldn't actually extrapolate on what she meant by dark. She couldn't explain what she meant. And that's something that's really strange, also a little bit interesting about discomfort, is that it's a little hard to describe. You know, it's a feeling, it's an energy, it's a vibe. Even with, you know, a non-magical scenario, if someone is making you feel uncomfortable, you may not actually be able to say exactly what it is that they're doing. It could just be a look, it could be a tone of voice, or it could just be, you know, a creepy feeling in your gut. It's subjective. For a long time, it was really common to refer to some magic as white and some as black, and we know now that that is a bad thing to do, has some pretty gross racial overtones, avoid that. But people have found this fun little loophole where some magic is referred to as dark and some as light. And some people who practice only the magic that they consider to be light might call themselves light workers. And there's nothing wrong with using the term, you know, there's nothing wrong with any of that really. And you don't need to work magic that makes you uncomfortable. That's not what I'm trying to do here. But as is often my experience in religious circles, those who consider themselves, you know, on the side of light, more righteous in some way, are often the ones whose feelings about right and wrong seem to be the most restrictive and also seem to be the loudest. There are benefits to being uncomfortable, to wandering through the dark, to coming face to face with the things that you fear. So when it comes to witchcraft, darkness has a couple different meanings, and also, you know, they're all very subjective. So not only is the moral weight of dark magic, you know, a subjective issue, but what actually constitutes dark magic is as well. So I wanted to pin down a kind of general idea, a description of what might be dark magic, maybe a list of categories that could be described as dark magic. So I decided to look at a couple of dark goddesses and their kind of sacred domains, you know, the things that they're known for, the things that they have dominion over. And I chose Hecate and Lilith. And I realized that both of these goddesses are from the kind of general Mediterranean part of the world and the religions that are from there. So this list is not exhaustive, you know. But I think this is a good place to start. I just finished reading Hecate, Goddess of Witches by Courtney Weber. Or should I say I just reread it? Because I have read it before. I know I did. I look in my ebook history and it says that I read it and I probably liked it because I like everything that Courtney does. But after my brush with death last year, I feel as though this dark goddess who's, you know, associated with the journey to the underworld is a little more personally relatable. Maybe that's unfortunate, but you know, that's neither here nor there. In any case, I am certainly taking in and experiencing the material in a much more profound way this time around. I want to read you a short little paragraph from the book that describes, you know, our common image of this goddess, who she is. She is known as a goddess of death, one who guards souls in the underworld, whose symbols include the black dog, the whip, and the dagger. She is known as the keeper of the crossroads, a goddess who helps those experiencing transition. She is called the keyholder or torchbearer, the one who opens doors and reveals secrets, a goddess of the cosmos who holds mysteries beyond our modern understanding. She is also associated with the depths of the sea, the stars of the night, and the fertile earth. She is a patroness of parents. She has also been called the three-headed, the one who arms the hand with murky, dreadful lamps, goddess of the crossroads, the voice of dogs, and the far darter. She has been associated with the underworld and mystical rites involving bloody sacrifices, justice, and creatures of revenge. She has been many things over millennia, but to both ancient devotees and those of the modern age, Hecate is a goddess of witches. So dark magic in relation to Hecate involves death, weaponry, domination, creatures of the night like dogs and snakes, fire, liminality or existing between two places, travel, secrets, the cosmos, the deep sea, the earth and fertility, the moon, blood, sacrifice, revenge, justice, independence and solitude, and of course, witchcraft. Then we have Lilith, a goddess with Hebrew and Sumerian origins. To make my list of her sacred domains, I pulled out my well-worn copy of The Glam Witch by Michael Hercus. So Lilith's vibe consists of demons and other creatures like vampires and succubi, defiance, snakes again, and also birds, the night, sexuality and seduction, the desert and the sea, childbirth and childhood illness, Lucifer, the devil, Satan, you know, every kind of incarnation of that particular deity, vanity and glamour, fire, and again, independence and solitude. There's definitely a lot of overlap, isn't there? I also noticed that the mythology of both of these goddesses involves them turning their back on their family of origin, being involved in the destruction of that family of origin, wandering, you know, all over, wandering in general, but wandering, you know, heaven, the earth, and hell as solitary entities, and eventually choosing their own new family or some other deities or people to associate with. And I think this is really important because, I mean, those are some of the scariest things that any of us can do. And I mean, we're not goddesses, right? We're just regular people. Those are some of the scariest things in life, you know, to leave home, to turn our backs on the past, to be alone, to find ourselves, to claim our own power, and then to create our own life from scratch. Those are all extremely uncomfortable experiences, even if they're necessary, even if they're empowering and exciting, even if they make life better. To get to that point, we have to wade into a sea of discomfort. And except that we're just going to have to stay there for a while. So darkness and witchcraft encompasses the moon, nighttime, the stars and planets, all of the elements, the balance between life and death, defiance, justice, fighting back, punishing, making sacrifices, striking out on our own, healing, sex and pleasure, honoring the give and take of the earth's power, destruction and creation. And that is, to me, simply the description of witchcraft, you know, minus maybe a few adjectives. And it is also, I just have to say, very rock and roll. both goddesses are also associated with poisonous plants and altered states of consciousness. So we have sex, drugs, rock and roll, and witchcraft. Such a cool vibe. And that's also, you know, that's how society sees rock and roll, heavy music, even stuff like blues and jazz, that they're very dark, that they maybe even are satanic, right? I think there are fewer people that consider them satanic these days, but a lot of people see them as a very dark form of expression. And they all express very deep emotions and deep thoughts and beliefs, things that make people uncomfortable. It's very intimate and sexy and scary, and something that we should be maybe keeping a secret, you know, locking it up, walk away from it. That's how people see rock and roll. That's how people see these dark goddesses and dark magic. I've said before that darkness is important because without it, we wouldn't recognize the beauty of the light. And these days, I think I would amend that statement to the darkness is important. You know, full stop. The benefit and beauty of darkness isn't just in the leaving it behind and stepping into the light. It's not simply something to endure until we can escape. Not always, anyways. It's something we need to really feel and to honor and to maybe even love. Within the darkness is where we heal, we fight, we move and grow, we strike out on our own, and we also connect with each other through that. To lead a full life in the future and right now, we have to get comfortable with being a little bit uncomfortable. So does that mean, you know, to be a witch, you have to go scarf down some poisonous berries, walk alone at night, cast curses, trade in your pet cat for a dog or a snake, sacrifice blood or have sex just because that's what bad bitches do? Of course not. Come on. I would never say that. If you want to do all those things, please feel free. That sounds lovely. But you should never jeopardize your actual safety or force yourself to do anything that genuinely feels wrong. There's a difference between something being kind of uncomfortable and something feeling very wrong and bad. You don't actually have to be Lilith or Hecate, you know, to embrace your own darkness. The point is that to embrace darkness in your life and in your magic is to embrace wholeness. So ask yourself, what does being whole look like to you? Does your current practice make you feel that way? And if it doesn't, what's missing? Why is it missing? Are you maybe avoiding things that scare you or embarrass you or just make you know, feel uncomfortable? And what do you think you'll lose if you accept that darkness? Also, what do you think you could potentially gain? My current interest in these goddesses and the types of witchcraft associated with them is very specifically tied to death and the underworld. I think about death a lot these days. Can't really help it, but definitely not in the same way I did when I was deep in my depression. I'm safe, I promise. Nothing to worry about. It's something that feels a little less far away than it did before. Death feels a little bit less scary, and also a little more scary, if I'm being honest, than it used to. I have this simultaneous desire to understand death better and to get as far away from it as I can. It's a weird and uncomfortable place to be, but you know, for now I'm just gonna roll with it. I don't know what other choice I have. Magic and witchcraft that aligns closely with death is a very interesting thing because it's so varied. You know, there's a lot to it. Some of the things that may be obvious are mediumship and speaking with spirits or ghosts. Baneful magic like curses and hexes, ancestor veneration, and using materials and spells and rituals like bones or fur, poisonous plants, or things like mushrooms that are such an integral part to the, you know, the physical processes of death. Something that's maybe a little less obvious is the focus on life. When someone works a lot with death in a spiritual context, they don't usually focus simply on the death part of this entire cycle. They celebrate and honor all of it. Death and life aren't opposites. They're two sides of the same coin. One cannot exist without the other. I think that's why goddesses like Hecate and Lilith are also associated with birth and children and parents, you know, being born and dying, they're not actually very different. Either way, you are transitioning from one state of being to another. You are becoming someone or something new. The energy of death is the energy of transformation. This is very clear when we look at astrology. Pluto is the planet of death and is named after the Roman god of the underworld, but it is also bursting with the energy of transformation. Same with the tarot. When the death card is pulled in a reading, it certainly means that something is coming to an end. Not usually your actual literal life, but it also means that something new is beginning and this death is necessary to make space in your life. If you're looking to make very big changes, the energy of death is the one that you need to hold on to. You can also think of it as the energy of destruction and creation. You have to destroy something to be able to create something else. This is how our world works. Everything is recycled. You can't create from nothing. You need materials and resources, matter, which you can then repurpose. Every time we create anything, we are actually transforming something that already exists. I am in the process of trying to transform my life, trying to take things that have hurt me and damaged me into things that can make me strong, or even just, you know, just neutral. Not everything can be spun in a positive way. That's okay too. And that's still a very difficult thing to do. I would like to change the way that I work, the place that I live, my relationships with other people, and a few different aspects of my physical and mental health. To help me accomplish those goals with magic, I could look to my ancestors for inspiration and guidance. I could harness the energy of the darker phases of the moon, like releasing things when the moon is waning and creating something new when we reach that phase. I can include ethically harvested bones or fur from animals in my rituals and ask for them to share their energy with me. If that makes you squeamish, that's totally okay. In all honesty, that's a tough one for me. And I generally avoid buying anything new that's made of fur or leather, and I don't work with a lot of bones in my practice. Something I do have, and that I've been using even more lately, are a couple of porcupine quills. Porcupines are such cool and like cute little animals. They have this very sweet and playful demeanor, but obviously, you know, when shit goes down, they become this little ball of fucking knives that you should just absolutely run away from if they even look at you sideways. Like if you see a porcupine in the wild, turn around. The quills, though, interestingly, are hollow. So, you know, when I'm holding it, it's super, super lightweight. And it even feels kind of fragile. I often use them to carve a candle. That's kind of my main use of it. But when I do, I'm reminded that being strong, it doesn't always mean being super solid and rigid. It doesn't mean giving up your softness or your vulnerability. It's about trusting your instincts and being willing to enforce a boundary when necessary. You also have to know when to put up your defenses. A porcupine doesn't just walk around, knives out, not letting any other animal get close. That's not how they live, you know? They know when to put down their defenses so that they can experience joy, or be silly, or make friends. They also love to eat pumpkins, so there's another thing that we have in common. When you first think of, you know, using individual animal parts, it seems very gruesome. And that's when you focus on, you know, the death, the decomposition even. But those individual parts still hold some of the energy of the whole animal, the animal that they come from. You know, death doesn't erase the impact that animal made on the world. And if you approach it with reverence and love, it can be a real asset to your magic. In terms of working with death, it's also incredibly empowering to confront or make friends with the things that frighten you. If you understand them better, if you see their positive qualities or their necessary qualities, if you make a relationship with them, the odds of them hurting you or surprising you, I mean, they go right down. It's about breaking that taboo. When it comes to death, you cannot ever understand everything there is to know, unfortunately. Wouldn't that be lovely? But is a little bit of mystery really such a bad thing? You know, Do you really need to know everything that happens after you die? What for? What are you going to use that information for? You know, it's going to happen someday no matter what. No matter how much you know or understand, you'll die just like everybody and everything else. Maybe you'll see it coming and maybe you won't. Maybe you'll be able to choose when it happens. Maybe you won't get to choose anything. But either way, the life that you're living right now will end and you will become someone or something else. That will not erase the impact that you made on the world, good or bad. And that is the thing that you can understand. In a lot of ways, that's the thing that you can control. Taking control of your life and using it to put magic out into the world is death-centered witchcraft in its own way. I want to take a quick break to express my gratitude to everyone who supports the show on Patreon. Not only do these people offer financial support that, you know, it allows me to pay for hosting and research and audio equipment, but the emotional support and the encouragement that they've given me over the years, it helps make this work feel so satisfying and enriching to my life. I wish I could personally thank each and every person right now, but I am very fortunate that there are just too many. So today I want to shine the spotlight on Annalisa, Emily, and Amanda, three of my newest supporters. Thank you so much for helping me ring in the new year with your love and with your support. I really couldn't do it without you. All right, let's get back to today's episode. I've heard the phrase or expression, you know, a dark night of the soul many times in my life, usually in a context of, you know, you're going through turbulent times, you're going through painful things. And actually, it's more like having gone through turbulent times, because we usually use it in a past tense, don't we? It can also mean to experience a crisis of faith. I definitely would say that I have been through that recently, and that I'm now starting to really come through it. The expression itself comes from a poem and writings by St. John of the Cross in the 16th century. And the dark night of the soul really is a sort of purification of the spirit on the path to enlightenment. The darkness in the poem doesn't refer to, you know, pain or evil or anything specific like that. It's more about the feeling that God is unknowable, as is the path to ultimately connect with God. It speaks to a yearning for connection with the divine and the discomfort in not knowing how. But there is a definite air of belief that they will eventually get there. So the colloquial ways of using the expression certainly aren't wrong. They aren't quite in line with the original poem. You know, things change over time. Expressions and words and language. But for me, I think all of these interpretations, you know, all blended together, really speak to what I've been going through the last, you know, almost 2 years, I guess. I've been experiencing, you know, very difficult, turbulent times for a little while now. Times you might consider dark times, you know. And it definitely led to a crisis of faith, of spirituality. I felt really disconnected, and eventually I began to feel, you know, cast aside. It actually started in 2020, and oddly, the pandemic itself was not, it wasn't really the main cause of it or anything like that. You know, I had just released my first book, it was a bestseller, should have been super excited. I wasn't as excited as I felt like I should have been. And then I had to move, because the apartment I'd lived in for more than 10 years had been sold, which is no big deal, right? I'm a big famous author now, I'm a big girl, I have a good chunk of savings, I'm so ready for bigger and better things. But none of that seemed to overcome, you know, really normal obstacles in finding a good and safe place to live. It didn't wipe out my debt. You know, it didn't make my credit rating better, unfortunately. Should be, right? The good things that we do, which make us money and are successful, should, you know, reflect on those, but whatever. So, you know, property management companies didn't really want to rent to me. And it led to me living in this really old apartment building in the city, which is architecturally beautiful, underneath all the bugs and grime and criminal activity. This is a scary place to live. It sucks because it's honestly, It's the worst apartment building in the city, and it's also probably one of the most beautiful buildings that's ever been built here. It's almost 100 years old. It's really special. But it was difficult and it was scary. And more than one time, I found myself thinking, Jesus, is this really what all of that, regular work, but also spiritual work and prayer and focus gets me? Is this the best that I can really do, even though I've been doing all of that stuff? I've been doing everything right. And once I started thinking like that, in hindsight, I can see that it was really downhill from there. Because those aren't my values, I don't believe that my spirituality can or should be measured by how successful I am in life, how materially successful. It's not what I'm about. But I certainly started to feel like my own spiritual practice was doing a lot more for everyone else than it was for me. Now, I love getting feedback from a lot of you about how the show or something I said or something I wrote in a book inspired you on your magical journey. That makes me feel really good. But when I started, descending into my dark night of the soul, it started to feel like I was giving something away, something that I couldn't spare. I didn't have enough of it, And I felt like a total fraud. How can I actually help others find magic when I constantly find myself questioning whether I even believe that magic exists? And even now, I feel very differently, but those all sound like very rational arguments to me, I see why I was thinking like that. I see the path that I took to get there. But I will say that when things were at their worst, the world, it didn't feel dark. That's not how I would describe it. It felt blank. It felt like nothing. Everything felt like nothing. And nothingness, in my opinion, is really the absolute worst feeling in the whole world. Everything, all the people, the world, everything was still moving all around me, but I felt nothing for it. Magic still existed for others, but I didn't feel it. I wasn't connected, and I felt nothing. Darkness and nothingness are two very different things. And if you think about that very literally, nothingness doesn't necessarily mean that you're sitting in dark, in the dark. In darkness, in real life, you have the moon and the stars. You have quiet and stillness. The world is whatever you choose to see and feel that it is. You aren't actually missing out on life because life is, I mean, the world is asleep. It's waiting for you when the sun comes up and the lights turn on. It's peaceful. But nothingness isn't peaceful. It's scary. The scariest thing about the dark is that you can't see what's right in front of you. You have to rely on your other senses or another person for guidance. In your own home, your own little world moving around in the dark might not even be that dangerous. Because it's not as unknown. You know where everything is. If you're walking through your living room in the dark, you might remember, oh, my couch is, over here, so I'm gonna move a little to the left. But when I was drowning in that nothingness, I truly had no idea where I was at, where to go. I had no one to offer guidance. I had nothing to grab onto. My senses were flipping constantly between feeling very blunted, that nothing feeling, and feeling totally overloaded. I felt this really empty place inside me where my intuition used to be. It felt like there was just nothing there. And I'm doing a lot better. I feel very differently now. But I am certainly wading through darkness, through dark times, right now, through moments when I can't really see where I'm going. But my senses are there, they're activated, and I even have some people to guide me. I think and even dwell often on dark topics and on dark feelings, the things that we typically associate with darkness. But the good thing about that is there are feelings there for me to feel. It's not nothingness. There's something there. I'm not just staring blankly at the wall all the time, which literally I used to do for like hours and hours. It's so wild to think about now. So I feel lost and I'm looking to find my way, but it's because I believe that there is something for me to find. That's why figures like Hecate and Lilith feel so comforting and so relatable to me right now. Hecate is the torchbearer and the keeper of the keys who will meet you at the dark crossroads, help you move to where you need to go. Lilith is that fire inside you that sees freedom waiting in the unknown, and that is willing to walk away from paradise, from what you know, from and she reminds you that whatever is out there is worth it as long as it's your choice. Darkness is not where I was at my lowest point. Darkness is where I'm going to heal, and I'm going to grow, and I'm going to change. It's not a super comfortable place to be, but it does feel good in its own way. Probably because I feel a little bit stronger. You know, I feel closer to feeling whole than I was before. So my magic and my spells have changed. You know, they're much less about material things. I put up a new altar, and although I do have things there to, you know, help me bring in some money in a new home, because I want to feel safe, those aren't really the main focus. I'm mostly working on exorcising those feelings of nothingness. I'm, you know, looking to these goddesses of darkness and of death for inspiration, because Death and I are old friends now. We're old friends now. So I'm lighting, you know, candles to ask for guidance, and I ask, you know, the goddesses and the universe and whatever to have my back. I'm working magic not for the purpose of finding my way to the light, but to find my way back to myself. So a lot of this magic is considered dark. Some of it is baneful. It curses and hexes. It protects. It destroys. Yeah, it might even create a little bit of chaos. But I have no regrets. And I'm going to offer no apologies for any of that. To quote the last lines of St. John of the Cross's poem, I remained lost in oblivion. My face I reclined on the beloved. All ceased and I abandoned myself, leaving my cares forgotten among the lilies. The dark night of my soul is now, and it is a beautiful place to be because I have faith that my spirit is in good hands. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and I hope you'll join me next time because I had the absolute pleasure of speaking to two of the stars of a new documentary called Coven, about three millennial witches exploring the power of community and connection in witchcraft. The documentary premiered on CBC in Canada here on January 28th, and it's currently streaming on the Gem app if you're here in the country. And unfortunately, at this time, the film is not available anywhere in the US, but I'm hoping that will change very, very soon. So this is a special treat for those of you outside of Canada who want to look in on these witches and some of their really wild journeys of discovery. Seriously, it's so interesting. One of our witches, Andra, travels to Romania to connect with her Romani and Romanian heritage. And she had the privilege to meet with Mihaela Minca, who is probably one of the most famous witches in the entire world. And then we have Laura, who travels to Scotland and to Salem, Massachusetts, to connect with a couple of her ancestors, her actual ancestors, who were both involved with witch trials. And she also meets a really interesting man who's working to atone for the actions of his own family during that time. The film also touches on the ins and outs of coven life, past lives, fate, and expressing magic through creativity. Andra and another star of the film, Lilani, are both musicians. And I'm going to post links in the description to check them both out on Spotify. Andra's band Willow Switch is this really dark and ethereal, you know, folk duo, and includes the singing saw. She plays the singing saw. Absolute pleasure to listen to. It's also, it's very unique. You know, you don't get to hear a lot of singing saw these days. Kids these days, right? They're not playing enough saws. And then Lilani, as witch prophet, uses like jazz, funk, soul, hip hop, and rap to explore and express her own magical power. I got major Erykah Badu vibes from her latest album. So, you know, that's a little bit of what you can expect there. I've also been sharing both of these musicians and Laura's work as a tarot reader on my Instagram and Facebook accounts. So check that out. And that episode will be out in 2 weeks. This is the first of so many exciting interviews I've already got lined up for 2024, and I cannot wait to share them with you. I'm so excited. This year, I'm going to be exploring themes like darkness and dark goddesses like I did today, animism and connecting with the life force of the planet, sustainable and low-waste magical practices, self-expression and creativity through witchcraft, and as always, the beautiful magical practices and traditions of cultures all around the world. Oh man, I'm so pumped. I'm buzzing with excitement. I've got so much cool stuff lined up. I'm so excited for this new year. I'm so excited to be, you know, back to work in earnest. I tried my best at the end of last year, but this month I'm really feeling like I'm finally back to work full time, and I have so much to look forward to and to share with everyone. So thank you for joining me. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode of the Fat Feminist Witch Podcast. If you want to learn more about me, hear past episodes of the show, read some helpful blog posts, and buy any of my books, you can do that from my website, thefatfeministwitch.ca. You can also find me on Instagram as Fat Feminist Witch and Twitter as Fat Feminist Witch, and there's an I missing in that one. If you want to buy t-shirts, stickers, journals, and more with Fat Feminist Witch logos and artwork, you can do that at my TeePublic store, which does go up to size 5X, and you will find the links to all of those in the description of the show. Until next time, my witchy friends, keep on ranting, raving, and wand waving.